In the following days, I learned an incredible amount in an incredibly short time. I, a 7-year-old boy who a short while ago hardly knew what war meant, let alone ultimatum, mobilization, and cavalry reserve, soon knew, as if I had always known, the hows and wheres and wherefores of the war, and I even knew the why. I knew the war was due to France's lust for revenge, England's commercial envy, and Russia's barbarism. I could speak these words quite glibly. One day I simply started to read the newspaper and was surprised at how extraordinarily easy it was to understand. I asked to be shown the map of Europe, and saw at a glance that we could handle France and England, but experienced dumb anxiety at the size of Russia. I consoled myself with the thought that the terrifying numbers of Russians were counterbalanced by their unbelievable stupidity, depravity, and incessant vodka swilling. I also learned, as quickly as if I had always known them, the names of the various military chiefs, the strengths of the armies, the types of armaments and displacements of ships, the positions of the most important fortifications, and the locations of the front lines. In fact, I soon realized that a game was being played here that made life more exciting and thrilling than anything before. My enthusiasm for this game and my interest held to the bitter end. Here I must say a word in defense of my family. It was not my close relatives who turned my head. The war oppressed my father from the very start. He looked on the enthusiasm of the first weeks with skepticism, and on the hate propaganda that followed with profound disgust, though, as a loyal and patriotic man, he wanted Germany to win. He belonged to the many liberal spirits of his generation who had secretly been convinced that war among Europeans was a thing of the past. The war found him at a loss, and, unlike many others, he refused to indulge in wishful thinking. I occasionally heard him utter words full of bitterness and doubt, not just about the Austrians, that offended my newly acquired enthusiastic bellicosity. No, it was not my father's fault, nor any of my other relatives, that within a few days I became a fanatical jingoist and armchair warrior. You must blame the atmosphere, the general mood, the tug of the masses, which produced unimagined emotions in those who surrendered themselves, even 7-year-old boys, and left those who stayed aloof suffocating in a vacuum of arid emptiness and isolation. For the first time I felt, with naive delight and without a trace of doubt or misgiving, the effect of my people's strange talent for creating mass hysteria. It may be a compensation for their limited talent for individual happiness. I had no idea that one might possibly exclude oneself from this general festive delirium. It did not occur to me that there could be anything bad or dangerous in something that so obviously filled one with joy and provided such delightful intoxication. For a schoolboy in Berlin, the war was something very unreal. It was like a game. There were no air raids and no bombs. There were the wounded, but you saw them only at a distance, with picturesque bandages. One had relatives at the front, of course, and now and then one heard of a death. But being a child, one quickly got used to their absence. And the fact that this absence sometimes became irrevocable did not seem to matter. As to the real hardships and privations, they were of small account. Naturally, the food was poor. Later there was too little food, and our shoes had clattering wooden soles, our suits were turned, there were school collections for bones and cherry pits, and surprisingly frequent illnesses. I must admit all that made little impression. Not that I bore it all like a little hero, it was just that there was nothing very special to bear. I thought as little about food as a soccer enthusiast at a cup final. The army bulletins interested me far more than the menu. The analogy with the soccer fan can be carried further. In those childhood days, I was a war fan, just as one is a soccer fan. I would be making myself out to be worse than I was if I were to claim to have been caught up by the hate propaganda that, from 1915 to 1918, sought to whip up the flagging enthusiasm of the first few months of the war. I hated the French, the English, and the Russians as little as the Portsmouth supporters detest Wolverhampton fans. Of course, I prayed for their defeat and humiliation, but only because these were the necessary counterparts of my side's victory and triumph. What counted was the fascination of the game of war, in which, according to certain mysterious rules, the numbers of prisoners taken, miles advanced, fortifications seized, and ships sunk, played almost the same role as goals in soccer and points in boxing. I never wearied of keeping internal scorecards. I was a zealous reader of the army bulletins, which I would proceed to recalculate in my own fashion, according to my own mysterious, irrational rules. Thus, for instance, 10 Russian prisoners were equivalent to 1 English or French prisoner, and 50 airplanes to 1 cruiser. If there had been statistics of those killed, I would certainly not have hesitated to recalculate the dead. I would not have stopped to think what the objects of my arithmetic looked like in reality. It was a dark, mysterious game, and its never-ending, wicked lure eclipsed everything else, making daily life seem trite. It was addictive, like roulette and opium. My friends and I played it all through the war, 4 long years, unpunished and undisturbed. It is this game, and not the harmless battle games we organized in streets and playgrounds nearby, that has left its dangerous mark on all of us.